In 2005, Lebanon is a country where approximately 30% of the population lives in poverty. With a national debt towering over $40 billion, Lebanon's economic future is at best unstable and at worst disastrous. After 15 years of civil war came to an official end with the signing of the Taif Accord in the early 1990s, a large-scale international effort to reconstruct Lebanon began, and the public face of this reconstruction became the former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri, assassinated in February 2005 in a bomb blast which hit his motorcade in downtown Beirut. Many people in Lebanon today argue that the billions of dollars loaned to the country for post-Civil War reconstruction efforts were heavily mismanaged and squandered, with only certain parts of the country rebuilt, such as downtown Beirut and the country's main international airport, while the majority of the country did not see any of the reconstruction finances and remains devastated from war. Hariri, who is a billionaire prior to the reconstruction effort, gained billions more in personal wealth throughout the reconstruction process, as many of the companies he directly owned or held shares in were rewarded many of the reconstruction contracts. Today, with growing poverty and unemployment in Lebanon, and with large sections of the nation still bearing the wounds of war, many question Hariri's economic policies and their benefits for the people of Lebanon. After Hariri's death in February 2005, in an assassination which has been widely blamed on Syria, Hariri became a symbol of the Lebanese opposition movement, sparked by his death and defined by large-scale demonstrations in downtown Beirut, demanding for Syria to withdraw its 15,000 troops from the country in compliance with UN Security Council Resolution 1559, a demand which was met in April 2005 when Syria withdrew its military and intelligence services. After his death, the public image of Hariri in Lebanon and internationally is commonly associated with the Lebanese opposition movement, which, in coordination with international pressure, forced Syrian troops from the country. However, today, increasingly people are again focused on the continuing effects of his economic policies on the people of Lebanon, in a country where now the acting prime minister was Hariri's minister of finance, and large sections of the country remain impoverished and unemployed. I had the opportunity to speak with Leila Hatoum, staff writer at the Daily Star, the Middle East's largest English daily newspaper distributed throughout the region. Leila is also a legal graduate currently working on a master's thesis in international law. In this interview, Leila outlines her perspectives on Hariri's economic policies, their current effects, and their possible future consequences for Lebanon.
When he was alive, nobody portrayed him as a symbol of freedom and for calling Syria out, Syria out. But after his death, the opposition took advantage of his death. He became a martyr. They took his image and his public strength and base, and they converted all of this. They changed him into a symbol for freedom. And they convinced the people that this guy was killed by Syria, so we have to call for Syria out. Mm. So in a sense, you feel like Syria was framed here for his death. They might have done it, they might not have done it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's not the father of freedom. He's not the one who has been calling for Syria out throughout his life. If you can find some paper or something that he said over TV, I would bet you, if you find something that he said, "I want Syria out," I would give you anything I have right now. So, it's like he never did that. But the opposition were like really smart to take the image of Hariri, because like he died at a time where everybody was restless and there was tension and everybody were fed up with the Syrians. Mm-hmm. They were like really smart. They took the image of Hariri, combined it with freedom, stuck them together and told people, this is the father of freedom. He is the image. He is the one who demanded freedom, so you should do the same. Mm-hmm. And the people just walk after it like sheep.
So about Hariri, when he was in power as prime minister, let's say in the years before he was assassinated, can you maybe give a little bit of detail, aside from this image that you're talking about, as to what his policies were? How did they affect this country? It seems to be something that's not as heavily discussed regarding his history.
Yeah, the problem with discussing Hariri is people now, okay, when he was alive, many people blamed him for all the economic setbacks we had, for the national debt, growing national debt and everything. After he died, nobody dares say anything about him because he's like this big image, the freedom, everything. But if you want to truly speak about Hariri, according to me, not anybody else, he dealt with Lebanon as a business project. He was mainly a businessman rather than a politician.
How?
Okay, look at all of Lebanon. Mm-hmm. The worst thing, now we have $43 billion national debt. Mm-hmm. He accumulated power as a prime minister in 1992. Mm-hmm. From 1992 to 1998, mm-hmm. it's like 6 years, mm-hmm. we had around like $30 billion national debt. Mm-hmm. With their interest and everything, now it reached $43 billion, mm-hmm. which is pretty much big for a small country like Lebanon. And if you look at all around Lebanon, mm-hmm. the only places which were reconstructed after the war mm-hmm. were the downtown zone, Solidar area, which Hariri has major shares in it, which his own companies rebuilt this part of town, and just like the highway to Saida, his own birthplace, and then the highway continues to Sur, but it's like doesn't branch to all of Lebanon's villages over there. And if you look at the north, if you're going all the way to the on the international road to the casino de Liban, it's the worst road you can ever see in your life. Mm-hmm. It's like not tarred, it's not like paved. And there are no social projects done. Okay, I can grant the guy that he gave lots of scholarships to people, mm-hmm. he gave some money to poor people, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that he was really good to Lebanon in the sense that he was a good politician. Mm-hmm. He was more like a business person who dealt with Lebanon as a business project. Get more donations to Lebanon? No, he didn't get more donations to Lebanon. He got more debts to Lebanon to rebuild the country. Mm-hmm. And we can see where he built it. Mm-hmm. Rebuilt it. And with minimal interest or high interest. There is an interest. Mm-hmm. We never got donations to rebuild the country. We always got debts. Mm-hmm.
And how does this debt affect people's lives okay. today here
how
in Lebanon?
How it affects? Okay. After he accumulated power, mm-hmm. if you look now at the class division of Lebanon, we used to have a middle class. Mm. It's now an extinct class. It's like you have 70% of the country, they're poor. His policies have helped impoverish more people in Lebanon. If you look at the creation of downtown area and everything, mm-hmm. most of the people who own property down there, apartments mm-hmm. and stuff like that, are big foreign businesses and Gulf people from Saudi Arabia, from the Emirates, and very, very, very few Lebanese people.
Okay.
Very few Lebanese people. So his policies, in my own perception of things, when I see my country where citizens get poorer instead of getting richer, mm-hmm. and only few people are getting richer, and they were already rich because of certain affiliations or anything, according to me, this is politically incorrect. There was something going wrong with his politics and the way he's dealing with the country and the economy and everything.
What do you think those things were? I mean, how specifically did Hariri's policies affect the country in this way, widening the gap between the rich and the poor and creating the types of poverty that you spoke about? How do you think his policies specifically created this situation?
Okay, let's start with the recent thing he's done. He says Paris 1, Paris 2, Paris 3. If you remember, like the conventions we had in Paris, where we go and beg for more money from other wealthy countries and the IMF. So he also says, I've done you good things and I brought you Paris 1, Paris 2, and money from Paris 1, Paris 2. But in reality, it's not he's bringing money for free to Lebanon. He's bringing debts plus interests to Lebanon. Who is benefiting from that? Mm. The downtown area? Parts of Lebanon, not all of Lebanon. Mm-hmm. Very few people in Lebanon, not all of Lebanon. Okay, show me one big project that he has done in one of the remote country, the remote villages in Lebanon. You can't name one. That's the problem. You can't name one. Okay, we are the people who are the one paying taxes, and we. Okay, if he leaves the power, he's not the one who's bound to pay back the debts he took from other countries and says that he put in, it's like in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. It's us, the citizens. We have to pay the debt plus the interest which he agreed on, which he signed in the name of Lebanon. Mm-hmm. Him and his ministers and his governments and everything. Mm-hmm. And something has went wrong during the past 13 years from 1992 until now. Something has went wrong where the national debt kept growing, growing, growing instead of him trying to decrease it. It was him increasing it. Mm-hmm. And him giving us credit that he's bringing money to the country, mm-hmm. and that he has rebuilt the country. Okay, I don't deny he was a good man. He helped lots of people. But at the same time, triple the amount of people he helped were forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Maybe describe from what you've seen in your work as a journalist in traveling this country and speaking to people throughout the country. Describe some things that you've seen in terms of communities, in terms of people, in terms of the human stories that illustrate what you're talking about.
Okay, I've been following up the electricity thing since early 2004. The electricity in Lebanon is really bad. Some places get around 2 hours of electricity per day. Oh. You know that? Sometimes they don't get electricity at all. And there's like power rationing, the power rationing policy. And I've been to places in Bikaa, remote villages in Baalbek, in Hirmil, in other places where they haven't heard of electricity before. I've been to Tripoli, which is like, at one point in Lebanon, it was the second capital of Lebanon. And you see people living, it's like, for 8,000 Lebanese liras, that's like around $5 per week. Families of 8 people. And they share like one plate every night, these 8 people, the mother, the father, and their 5 children. They share a plate of what? It's like, it has only 2 spoons of rice to eat. These people are the forgotten ones. Nobody did anything to them. And despite the fact that the social ministry, it's like, had collaborated with one of the directors to make a movie about them, and despite the fact that I wrote a couple of articles, the last was Voices of the Poor, nobody took a look at them. It's like, not Hariri, not the Karami family in Tripoli, nobody else. So these people, they live under poverty line. Okay, they're not poor, they're more than poor. So sometimes they stay for 2 days without food, and they live next to sewers, and they are filled like with germs. They're always sick, nobody helps them. And they are Lebanese citizens, and nobody like looks at them and or gives them money from the government, which claims that it's helping what? Lots of humanitarian foundations. Where are these humanitarian foundations? And why should we go to way up to the north, like in Tripoli? Around Beirut, I wrote about the poverty belts around Beirut, like in Naba'a and after Bush Hamoud and Haida. You find Lebanese people who are starving, but they're like so proud not to beg for money. And they push their kids, like since the age of 8, 9, 10, they take them away out of school because they can't afford to teach them. And they get them to the streets or to work with the carpenters in very hazardous jobs. Mm-hmm. These people, how you never take a look at them? Mm-hmm. You never take a look at somebody unless he's voting for you or he's from your district to vote for you. Mm-hmm. This is my perception of our politicians. I might be young, but living in Lebanon has taught me one thing, that our politicians are the worst kind of politicians in the world. In Lebanon, we are a very small country and we have more politicians than we have people. It's like, and it's amazing the percentage of bad politicians we have over here. They don't take a look at the person unless this person is going to vote for them or they're going to benefit from him in the future.
So the poverty that you spoke about, Lebanon's civil war came to an end in, let's say, the early 1990s. And since that time, Lebanon to the world has been projected as a nation of peace. Reconstruction had taken place at a rapid pace, Beirut's downtown core glistening. So the economic policies that you spoke about, perhaps did they, in your mind, perpetuate the same conditions that people were living in during the war?
Any country that goes out of war... Okay, you're going to have poor people, you're going to have people who immigrated and came back and brought money and everything. But It's like after having big businesses opening and other stuff, you need to decentralize these businesses, not restrict them in one area where only this people in this area would benefit from it, or people from other villages would have to immigrate from their villages and go down to this area to work in it and leave their villages not tended, the ground not tended, we don't have any more farmers, the farmers are not looked at.
So okay. A lot of people are moving to the cities.
Exactly. Because of what? Because of the economic policies we're having. If you just take care of one main city in Lebanon and not of the others, okay, other villages and other cities in Lebanon, people in them, they will move to this city because they will have electricity over there, they'll have social care, they'll have proper medication, they'll have schools and stuff like that. And the other villages, there will be nobody to work in it. And I will give you an example. Okay, the war had severe effect on people, but after we came out of war, okay, there's the reconstruction movement, which is bound to help everybody who would work in the reconstruction movement.
Okay.
Not everybody was allowed to get into the reconstruction movement, except for Harry's own business ventures that he supported or he called upon to come from outside and work over here. It's like there was severe competition from other big companies that came from outside to the companies that were emerging from the inside. Lots of businesses closed in Lebanon because of other big businesses who were opening in Lebanon, were brought to open in Lebanon. And let's talk about the farmers for a little bit. I spoke to the farmers a lot during their crisis. And like if you remember last year during winter, there were floods that killed all the crops that we might have during winter. And the government was so slow in taking care of that. In the years before that, like we used to discuss it with my parents, we used to see it over TV. We used to go like spend our summers in the Bika or in the south. So that's how we see them. Lots of people who grew apples, let's say, and potatoes, were the people who grew potatoes mostly, they were severely hit by the government Harry headed, its policies regarding the potato. They allowed the import of potato from Egypt, from Syria, from Jordan. And these potatoes are like way cheaper than the Lebanese potato. So even the citizens over here, they would prefer to buy something that is, cheaper than to pay for something that's national, like made in your own country. And this helped impoverish lots of farmers who take loans from the banks to even like grow these crops. And if they don't find somebody who's going to buy it from them, they're going to go bankrupt, lose their land, lose their houses. They will get their kids out of schools. And this is what happened. And same thing with those who grew grapes and who grew apples, who grew cucumbers and tomatoes and other stuff. But this is an example. The farmer, he just, plows the land, get a loan, grow crops, sell them, and pay part of his debts, right?
Mm-hmm.
If your government is not helping you in the sense of that it's not putting taxes on imports that would compete with your own merchandise, this is stupid.
It sounds to me that you're describing neoliberal economic policies. Basically, a liberalization of the market, an opening of the borders to external investment to be established in the country.
Listen to this. You're not allowed to do that until your country is like strong and it's back on its feet. If you're going directly out from war, you need to encourage your inside economics, like you help inside, citizens from the inside. And once you go strong, you open your markets to other places so you can have equal competition. You don't open the markets directly. You have small fish inside your tank and you open it directly to the sharks in the sea. You don't do that. The sharks will eat the fish and they will finish the rest. This is what happened.
Now, in terms of these policies, you also spoke about the national debt. In other countries in the South, the national debt and these types of policies that you spoke about have created crises. Let's say in Argentina, in recent years, the economy basically collapsed. A big reason for that was the national debt and the huge payments that Argentina was having to make. What do you see happening in the future? How did he's died?
He's gone.
But where do you see things going? Like how will these economic policies continue? Where are they going to go in the future? Where do you think they're leading this country?
Well, it's like, you know, the finance minister, former finance minister, Mr. Fouad Sanoura, who is now the prime minister. He's been a finance minister in the Harris government since 1992, right? And what I'm going to see that the man, as a person who knows how to deal with figures for a long time, he will still go outside Lebanon, get more debts, lower interest or higher interest, I don't care. It's still going to be debts with interest. He's going to pay for the older deaths with the new deaths, but we'll still have deaths, and it's going to increase and increase. And I truly hate it, but at one point, I'm not going to be pessimistic or like draw a black figure, but unless they truly take care of this matter, mm-hmm. we're going to reach a dead end where people are like fed up with this, and there might be like riots. Okay, just like it might be peaceful riots because the Iranian people hate war. They've been pushed into war several times and they hate it. They're like fed up with war. So what's going to happen is that I think we're going to have another 14th of March. So the same thing is going to happen. I don't know when. I just hope it's 14th of March so I can remember the date as well. And they're going to call for better politicians, better policies, economical policies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They might drive some corrupt politicians out. Mm-hmm. I just hope the Lebanese people would know where we're going to. $43 billion is not an easy number to just say. $43 billion can create a whole country. It can revive like 3-4 African countries. $43 billion, not million. And Lebanon is like smaller than to need $43 billion to be reconstructed. So I just hope that the new politicians would be aware that the Lebanese people might get fed up with them.
So you're talking about social change.
Yeah.
As a journalist, regarding these policies specifically and people's discontent with those policies due to their effects on them, what have you seen? Have you seen people addressing these issues, dealing with these issues? I'm not talking about politicians, but more on a grassroots sense.
Okay, let me tell you one thing. Wherever I go, it's like with my family, with friends, with people I talk to day-to-day basis, everybody nags about the national debt. But when some politician or somebody or some foreign reporter would come to them, they would just put a big grin on their faces like, oh, it's not a problem, we'll take care of it. We have survived a 15-year-old war. We're going to survive this. But the problem is like they nag about it in day-to-day life. Like in their daily life, they hate the fact that they don't get electricity, they don't get social attendance from their governments, no proper medication, schooling is like, it's a major crisis over here. The government doesn't take care of them, doesn't take care of the whims of the people and stuff like that, despite the fact that the government should be the follower of the people, not the people follower of the government. And they talk about it, but it's like to themselves. And this is what I'm fearing, that at one point it's going to reach up the nose things, like the last straw. They're accumulating, but they're not showing it. Suppressing something is really bad, and it's going to show on the long term. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem.
They show how?
I don't know. There might be another civil war, God forbid. There might be a riot against, like, toppling the regime, maybe getting new politicians. It might happen like peacefully through elections.
You have been listening to an interview with Leila Hatoum, staff writer at the Daily Star, the Middle East's largest English daily newspaper, which is distributed throughout the region. This interview focused on the economic policies of the assassinated former Prime Minister of Lebanon, Rafik Hariri, and their ongoing consequences for the country, in which upwards of 30% of the population continues to live in poverty 15 years after the official end of the civil war, with a national debt for a population of approximately 3.5 million people towering over $40 billion. Lebanon's economic future is at best unstable and at worst disastrous. After 15 years of civil war came to an official end with the signing of the Taif Accord in the early 1990s, a large-scale international effort to reconstruct Lebanon began, and the public face of this reconstruction became the former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri, assassinated in February 2005 in a bomb blast which hit his motorcade in downtown Beirut. Many people in Lebanon today argue that the billions of dollars loaned to the country for post-Civil War reconstruction efforts were heavily mismanaged and squandered, with only certain parts of the country rebuilt, such as downtown Beirut and the country's main international airport. While the majority of the country did not see any of the reconstruction finances and remains scarred by war, Hariri, who was a billionaire prior to the reconstruction effort, gained billions more in personal wealth throughout the reconstruction process, as many of the companies he directly owned or held shares in were rewarded many of the reconstruction contracts. Today, with growing poverty and unemployment in Lebanon, and with large sections of the nation still bearing the wounds of war, many question Hariri's economic policies and their benefit for the people of Lebanon. To view Lebanon's Daily Star newspaper online, visit www.dailystar.com.lb. That's www.dailystar.com.lb. For more information and analysis on present-day politics of Lebanon, visit the Independent Media Center of Beirut at beirut.indymedia.org. That's beirut.indymedia.org. This interview was recorded and produced in Beirut, Lebanon, for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stefan Christophe.